24. The mood in Martin's car as he drove the twins to school the next morning was like a jumpsuit made of fiberglass insulation, quiet and uncomfortable.
"So," Martin said, looking into the rearview mirror at his kids as they stared sullenly from the back seat. "Maddie, you drove my car, right?"
"Yeah."
"I shouldn't encourage you to break the law like that, but I'm impressed that you managed to find the rear entrance to the theater and get there without having an accident or getting pulled over by the cops."
Maddie said nothing.
"Now that you two know the truth, I can let you in on a little secret. This car is undentable. It's a trick I picked up from Philip. It also doesn't need any gas, oil, or maintenance of any kind, and it's invisible to police radar. Pretty cool, huh? No wonder you didn't get pulled over, eh?"
The twins said nothing.
"Not that you were speeding. I'm sure you were careful,"
Martin said.
"And it's no surprise you were able to pull that whole thing off. You're very capable, and I'm sure Brewster acting as a navigator must have helped, right?"
Neither Maddie nor Brewster said a word.
"Yep. You two had to work together to get to the theater. Just like you're working together to give me the silent treatment right now."
Maddie said, "If you want to talk, we can talk. Tell us what you and Mom and Philip are going to do to the Magnuses."
Martin shook his head.
"I can't."
Brewster said, "You can. You just choose not to."
"Yeah, well, that's adulthood in a nutshell. Not being able to do things because you decide you can't. That's going to be your harshest lesson out of this whole thing, I think. Look at all of these other schlubs driving their kids to school. Any one of them could kick their kids out of the car, go use a credit card they can't pay off to buy a console and a bunch of video games they can't afford, then blow off work for the day to play them. And I promise you, they'd all like to. None of them will. I'd love to bring you along for what we're going to do to the Magnuses, and I have the power to, but I won't, because that would be stupid. That's adulthood. Being a grown-up is like when someone trains their dog to sit with a weenie balanced on its nose until they give the dog permission to eat it. But you're the one with the weenie on your nose, and you're the one withholding permission from yourself to eat it. Learning not to allow yourself to do all the dumb things you'd really like to do is part of what makes you an adult. So is learning not to snicker every time your father says weenie."
The twins stopped snickering, laughed out loud for a second, then composed themselves.
"Being a responsible adult can be a real drag," Martin continued. "What makes it worse is that you find yourself thinking about what you would do if you were an irresponsible teenager who could get away with it. Why, if I were in your position, for example, I think I might be tempted to make nice until my father drove away so that he could tell his friend Philip that he dropped them off just like he was supposed to. Then, as an irresponsible teen, I'd probably find a private place, conjure up my ridiculous top hat, and look for a preset teleportation link named Meeting to Mangle the Magni, or something similar. And I'd use it."
"Would you?"
Brewster asked.
"Definitely, if I were an irresponsible teenager. As a responsible adult, I have to tell you that it's a terrible idea, and you should 100% tell Philip that I said so. Anyway, speaking hypothetically, as an irresponsible teen, upon arriving at the castle, I suspect I'd find Gilbert and Sid there waiting for me, as they've been cut out of Philip's plan as well, and also will want to watch what happens. I think they'd be able to help keep me, as well as any sibling I may have brought with me, safe."
"And that's what you'd do?"
Maddie said.
"Oh, yes. If being an adult is not doing things you want to because you know they're bad ideas, then maybe adolescence is doing things you know are bad ideas because you want to."
Martin pulled the car up to the curb and leaned over into the front passenger seat to look out through the window as the twins stepped out onto the sidewalk.
"Have a good day,"
Martin said.
I expect not to see either of you until tonight, when you come home from school.
Maddie and Brewster both said,
You won't.
Martin smiled.
Good.
They watched Martin drive away, then turned and walked toward the school. The twins spoke to nobody, including each other, as they walked through the halls, into the band room, and to the sousaphone closet. The low-frequency portions of the morning marching band practice drifted in through the walls, assuring them that they would not be disturbed, though the fact that the band was playing Tequila meant that they were wrapping up. Mrs. Sanderson, the band teacher, liked to end practice with something fun and not terribly challenging. Brewster asked,
Does it seem weird that they spend so much time trying to keep us from getting drunk, but every high school band plays that song?
Maddie performed the graceful arm wave that made her top hat appear and roll down across her shoulders, her cape unfurled behind her, and her cane extend from her hand. She used her thumbs to extend the crown of her top hat with an audible pop, pulled her white gloves out, then placed the hat on her head.
Adults, man, everything they do is weird.
Brewster followed suit, conjuring his own hat, cape, cane, and gloves. They both stepped into the sousaphone cabinet and closed the door behind them as the marching band out on the practice field shouted, Tequila! Hundreds of years earlier, and thousands of miles away, the twins appeared in the same immense room where their parents had been married. They stood on a narrow gallery, designed more for cleaning and maintenance than observation, which hung three quarters of the way up the wall. They looked down at the people milling around the gold-on-gold inlaid floor. Along the distant wall, the golden-raised dais, where Martin and Gwen had taken their wedding vows, now supported an empty golden throne, protected by two guards in golden armor. Raised galleries ran down both sides of the vast rectangular room, themselves sparsely populated with people walking at the specific pace that in any century marked them as tourists. A quiet, deliberate coughing noise made them both jump. The sound of two grown men laughing caused them to spin around as they tried to find the source of the noise. After several seconds of furious searching, the twins saw the telltale distortions in the background and floating periscope tips that gave away the positions of the two invisible magicians. Gilbert's disembodied voice said,
Sorry, I really tried not to startle you.
Maddie said,
That's all right.
Sid's voice said,
I, for one, am delighted that he failed. All fun aside, none of us, technically speaking, are supposed to be here, so I'd appreciate it if you made yourselves harder to spot.
The twins both touched their fingers in a specific order, mimed throwing a small object straight down at the ground, and more or less in unison said,
Ninja vanish!
They both disappeared, replaced by two hazy masses of distortion and the dull sound of bodily impacts, followed by grunts of surprise and pain.
Good work, Brewster said. You jumped right into me.
It's hard not to, Maddie said, when you lunge into my way like that.
The two continued grumbling as the tips of their own hat-mounted periscopes raised up out of their distortion fields.
These things have no peripheral vision, Maddie said.
Sid said,
Presenting a fine opportunity for you to practice caution, young Matheson, which I know is not particularly your most well-honed skill.
Which is how we knew you would be here,
Gilbert said.
We programmed this teleport location because we knew we could count on you. When foolhardiness is called for, you two don't disappoint.
Brewster said,
That's not fair. I'm cautious.
Sid said,
If your idea of caution is to stand back and wait for your sister to try things first, then yes, you're quite the cautious fellow. Oh, don't look so glum. We are just giving you a hard time.
Maddie said,
How would you know if we're looking glum? You can't see us. And also, nobody says glum anymore.
Brewster said,
So I assume you're here as part of the plan?
Sid said,
Yes, that is what you assume.
But you are here as part of the plan, right?
Maddie asked.
Gilbert said, We're here as part of a plan. Our plan?
Sid added,
which is to wait here with you, watch the events carefully as they unfold, and attempt to discern the exact contours of Philip's plan, which he refused to share with us.
Maddie asked, what time is the vote?
Don't know, Gilbert said. Sometime today.
Then why don't we jump forward an hour and see if it's started yet?
Patience, Sid said. I find that jumping ahead to find events scheduled to occur in the near future is like cranking up the fast forward on your VCR to its top speed.
Maddie said,
I've never used a VCR.
Brewster said, I've never even seen a VCR. I've just heard people talk about them.
Old people,
Maddie said.
That's fine, Sid said. Needlessly insulting, but fine. My point is that you end up overshooting, then you have to go back. You get things ruined for you, and usually spend almost as much time dialing the timing in as you would have if you just waited. Only instead of a nice, relaxing wait, you have the stressful experience of trying not to overshoot your target. No, I'm sure the meeting will start quite soon. We're better off just waiting. See what I mean?
Brewster asked. Gilbert, do you agree with this?
Only as much as I had to get him to shut up about it.
So what do we do while we wait? Maddie asked. It'll be hard to play cards when we can't see each other.
Sid said,
oh dear girl,
there's any number of games we can use to pass the time that do not require us to see each other. For example, I spy with my little eye something that begins with G.
Gilbert said,
tell me it's not gold.
It's not, but it very well might be something golden.
Sid, everything in this room is golden.
Yes, and therein lies the game.